Hey there, Getting in the Loop listeners. Ever wondered what can be done in your industry to help create a more circular economy? To mark the one-year anniversary of the Getting in the Loop podcast, I've put together a short ebook to help you navigate key circular trends in textiles and apparel, ICT and electronics, and packaging. And it includes links to related reports as well as relevant Getting in the Loop podcast episodes. It's yours to receive when you join up to our podcast newsletter at circularsectors.gettinginthelooppodcast.com. So head over to our website to get your copy of the Circular Sectors Navigator. That's again, circularsectors.gettinginthelooppodcast.com. Hi, I'm Katie Whelan, and join me each week as I talk with experts around the globe about circular economy. You'll find out what's being done to make it a reality, and if it can really solve the problems it promises. It's time for Getting in the Loop. Welcome back to the Getting in the Loop podcast. We're kicking off our fall 2020 season with a big milestone because we're celebrating 50 episodes of the Getting in the Loop podcast. Wow, when I say that out loud, I really think that's an accomplishment. I'm excited for when we get to 100 already. But of course, I know the importance of taking time to acknowledge your milestones as they come. So 50 episodes. I want to say thank you to you, listener, because I truly couldn't have done it without you. Thank you for sharing your favorite episodes, for leaving reviews of the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, and of course, for connecting and posting on LinkedIn. I've gotten the chance to meet many of you actually either in person or more likely virtually on LinkedIn over the last 1.5 years, and it has been a lot of fun. I also want to, of course, acknowledge the guests who have shared their expertise and, more importantly, their enthusiasm for circular economy over the 1.5 years that we've been up and running. And last but not least, I want to thank some of the people that you might not even be aware of because you don't see or hear them. So I'm talking about the small and mighty Getting in the Loop podcast team. Thank you, Monette, Alakisti, and Leticia. They have worked with me to help bring this podcast to life and have played really important roles in the development over the Getting in the Loop podcast show over the last 1.5 years. Today's episode was actually recorded in April, and I've had a bit of a hard time to not release it sooner because it is that good. It's not about thinking, which I know we talk a lot about on the Getting in the Loop podcast. It's actually about doing, and for that reason, I was kind of saving it to share with you as our special 50th episode. Today's theme revolves around asking the question, what would happen if you applied circular concepts to a local area or region? And to dive into this question with us is Ashley Morris, who is the CEO of Corio. Corio is a company actioning circular economy in Australia, Asia. And Ashley is widely recognized as a circular economy visionary with the skills, experience, and ability to not only inform future strategy, but to also lead the action required to achieve impact. In this episode, Ashley tells us about the state of circular economy in Australia, and she shares her experiences practically implementing circular economy strategies there. So get ready to hear about Corio's first project, aptly named the Circular Experiment, where Ashley and her team applied circular economy concepts such as reverse logistics and asset sharing to a street in Queensland, which resulted in economic, environmental, and social benefits. Ashley also shares key factors you should consider before embarking on your own circular experiment. Welcome to the Getting in the Loop podcast. Ashley, I'm really excited to have you here today.
Thank you so much for having me. This should be a lot of fun sharing insights into what we're getting up to down here in Australia.
Yes. So you've given us a hint of where you're calling from, but where exactly in Australia are you located?
So I'm based in the beautiful sunny Queensland, and I work out of Brisbane, one of our capital cities.
I've never been to Australia, but it's on my list maybe sometime post Corona, although who knows when that will be.
Yes, I think we're all waiting for some clarity on when we can all get back out there traveling around the world.
Yeah. So let's start off with a bit of a general introduction. If you could just tell us about your background and what you're doing now.
So I'm an environmental health scientist, but today I spend most of my time talking about the economy. My early part of my career was actually predominantly spent in Indonesia, assessing the drivers of waste pollution firstly, and then working in the palm oil supply chain with a not-for-profit organization that represented about 60% of the world's supply of palm oil. So I've seen some very long global supply chains that have some significant impacts in their process. And I had learned about the linear and the circular economy early into my career, especially when I was doing my thesis, which looked at electronic waste. But I didn't really understand the concept fulsomely at that time. And I really wanted to actually understand it much better than I did. And I got to a point in my career which, you know, was just seeing me put band-aids on a bigger problem, and I wasn't really okay with that. I quit my job, I returned to Australia, and I founded Australia's first pilot project for a circular economy called the Circular Experiment, and it very much was an experiment. And now I find myself as the CEO of a company after having a very successful experiment, and we are a team of five. We work in three countries across all aspects of the supply chain, from mining to all levels of government here in Australia, and we prioritize putting actionable projects forward that demonstrate what a circular economy can mean.
Yeah, well, you are doing some great work with Corio, and we'll come back to that shortly. And before we do, I wanted to learn a little bit more about circular economy in your part of the world. So we actually have quite a few listeners from Australia, and I'm curious to hear from you how circular economy is being approached there.
Yeah, it's been a really interesting, I think, last couple of years, particularly here in Australia. So when we started the circular experiment, there was no dialogue on the circular economy here at all, really. And then throughout that experiment, which was, we did that over 2017, the last two quarters of 2017. And we started seeing some reports emerge about what it could mean for jobs and emissions reductions in one of our neighboring states, South Australia. And it was a fantastic report. They got people talking. And then we started to see that expand into other reports and other policy agendas, but not policy itself. And then I also start to see industry adopt the terminology. And fast forward to today, the dialogue and the word is much more, you know, commonly used, but it's the understanding of what it really is not there yet at all. In Australia, we absolutely are taking the circular economy down to its lowest common denominator, which is recycling, which it absolutely is not in its entirety all about that. It's just that is one small element of the total opportunity that the circular economic model presents. So there's been a lot of progress, but we have a long way to go to really representing the circular economy accurately.
I also get that sense from a lot of different parts of the world. I mean, here in Europe, we are emphasizing other aspects besides recycling, but of course, there's still a lot of discussion about recycling. And I was in the States a couple weeks ago, and there the conversation was just very focused on recycling. So we need people like you to champion the idea and take it just beyond recycling.
Yeah, I think globally it's very common that people, you know, have the circular economy's understanding, you know, centered around recycling because it's an entry level. It's really easy to understand. It's tangible for the everyday person. And I think that's a critical part of our work is to expand people's understanding through demonstration of the other applications.
What I love about the work that you're doing right now is that you take a very practical approach. And I think that your circular experiment really showcases this quite well. So I would love to learn a little bit more about it. Could you share about the circular experiment? You did it in 2017, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. It was 2017, and my sister and myself started the circular experiment concept by, you know, on the back of a conversation, which we were, you know, really passionately, you know, presenting the challenges that we each had seen, you know, from our careers. You know, my sister comes to our company with a background in remote area nursing, so working in the most geographically, you know, distant places of our country with Indigenous peoples to make sure they have the right healthcare. And she had seen, similar to what I had seen, but in a, you know, a supply chain and production of global commodities, you know, perspective, that both of those systems were failing to address the systemic causes of, you know, the problems that we were seeing show up every single day. So we both came to that conversation very passionate, you know, about wanting to make change. We didn't know what that change would look like, but we both agreed that the circular economy presented a really intriguing model to test. And the reason we, you know, developed this as an experiment is because it was very much an experiment. There was no tangible projects that we could look to. There have, of course, and I think everywhere around the world can relate to this, is there had been niche examples in certain business operations, like recycling, for instance, or, you know, organic food and organics and food waste being diverted to compost, you know, to then go back to soil to grow food. Those examples had existed for a long time. But, you know, a higher level thinking or application of circular economy wasn't evident yet. And that's really what we wanted. We wanted to test the concept as much as we possibly could in a 6-month time frame, because we were doing it for free as well, because we didn't think there was any way to ask a business to invest in a concept that we weren't entirely sure about ourselves. So we went down on a city street and we shook the hands of business owners, went up, you know, introduced ourselves, explained what we were trying to do. Of course, they looked at us like, circular economy, what? But we eventually got better at listening and articulating what we thought we could support them to achieve through a circular economy approach. And we started to understand that there are a couple of key things that the businesses, of course, were caring about, that being around energy, water, waste, and also making sure that people wanted to come to this street, which you could also consider as like a microeconomy. So, and they told us the reasons why they felt people weren't coming. And a lot of it was like litter and it was grungy. Its identity wasn't very like popular or positive for families to spend time in this location. So, you know, we looked at 6 different concepts to apply, ranging from like reverse logistics through to asset sharing, to try to maximize the resources that were in the street, to also look at how we could limit, you know, trucks and their deliveries and the costs to business. We also looked at very practical things around reducing energy consumption of the businesses through just very practical, you know, projects, looking at how, you know, a major bar in the street could, you know, reduce opening certain fridges if they could just, you know, put all of the popular beers or alcoholic beverages in one fridge. Like simple things that actually made a big difference because it was reducing the, I guess, the demand of, you know, the cooling requirement for the fridge itself. And, you know, we were able to successfully achieve a 40% energy reduction for that, the biggest business on the street, which was a bar and restaurant. We were able to set up a reverse logistics project for packaging, for plastic packaging, you know, and then start to couple that, you know, same supplier of the plastic packaging for her to take the coffee grounds out of the street from all of the businesses that sold coffee to then use on her farm. And we started, you know, layering these projects to increase their circularity, and also the collaborative nature between these businesses and their key stakeholders. You know, and ultimately we delivered about 22 projects in that 6-month timeframe. All were, you know, cost neutral or cost saving, and some generated revenue. And ultimately we built social capital, which is one of the most important aspects that we, you know, we attained through the experiment, which was the businesses, whilst they had shared a wall, they never really knew each other or what their businesses cared about necessarily. They just, you know, they would open their shop for the day or their restaurant or their bar or their hairdresser, and they would just say hi to one another, and they'd, when they'd close up, you know, they'd say goodbye for the day, and that was it. That was the extent of the relationship. And by the end of our project, the businesses had formed an independent traders association, you know, where they all collectively agreed on objectives that they wanted to achieve. And they, you know, they talked about things that, you know, that if they worked together on, they could make greater impact, they could attract more people to the street to invest in each of their businesses, they could have incentives between them. You know, if you buy here, you get a discount there, etc. So it really created systemic change, which is what a circular economy is all about. And it was very much, you know, rooted in practical application and learning by doing. And that is really difficult for a lot of people to do. Actually, I've learned over the past several years, actually, you know, working in a circular economy, is that it's actually quite rare to just get out there and do it. But I can, you know, firsthand tell you that it was the most valuable experience of my life and my career. And it certainly has led us to be the company that we are today.
It's so fascinating to hear you speak about this. And I think one of the things that we are really lacking in circular economy are these tangible examples. And what you've been able to do with this circular experiment is to, what you said, take six different concepts and apply them and make sort of like a microcosm for what could be done at like a larger scale. And it seems like doing it in in a street allowed you to be able to, even though it wasn't easy there by any means, but it was allowing you to sort of play around and try to see how you could apply these different types of concepts.
Yeah. No, I think that's really important. We've had so many people reach out from all around the world, actually, to say, like, is there a blueprint, like, of how you did this? And, you know, we never spent the time to, like, write it all down, but we obviously retrospectively did. But, you know, I think it's so important for people to define a system in which they're going to apply certain circular concepts. You can't do it all and you can't do it alone, is something we often say. So I think the concept of a street, a precinct, you know, a school or, an institution of some sort can really help give parameters or scope. And then, you know, you can define your inputs and your outputs, your key actors, and start to build your layers. But, you know, it's just putting one foot in front of the other and being brave enough to do that.
Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, how did you decide on this specific street?
Yeah, good question. We had a number of advisors. We were typically going to start with one house, one institution, so a school or maybe an aged care facility, maybe a smaller, you know, medical facility, hospital. So a house, hospital, and then a business. And then we realized from our advisor that, like, you need economies of scale. You need to have enough materials, you know, that are potentially getting leaked out of a supply chain, such as waste, for someone to care enough about collecting it because they need to see viability or value in the material. You need to have enough, you know, energy consumption. You need people to be co-located. So what we started to understand was that the best way for us to create this demonstration was to select a street. And then we knew there was a number of popular streets, you know, where a lot of people go, you know, at night and also to buy their, you know, their groceries, their clothes and all of those things. Then we narrowed it down to this particular street because it wasn't so heavy with foot traffic from a tourism perspective, because we also needed to be there day in, day out and not interrupt, I guess, business in a huge way. And I think if the street was the busiest one, like there's a beautiful street here and that's famous all around the world that people go to, and we just didn't want to, that didn't seem right. We needed to have a way to build meaningful relationships with the businesses, which meant we needed a bit of free time to actually engage with them. And if they were constantly busy serving customers, then that would have been very difficult. So we knew we needed a street for economies of scale. Then it came down to selecting a street that gave us balance with time and freedom to implement projects that were very public facing, that wouldn't detract from business and the productivity of the street. And so we selected Ocean Street.
Yeah. And you mentioned that you took like six different concepts. Could you elaborate on what these concepts were?
Yeah, absolutely. So we took concepts from all different reports that we had read on the circular economy from all over the world. So the six concepts that we looked at were resource efficiency, asset sharing, incentivized return, reverse logistics, and innovative technology.
Wow, so that's quite a lot of different concepts, but they also seem to go together quite well in terms of like how can we use technology to help with reverse logistics, et cetera.
Yeah, and we took these out of reports that we had read. They're not, you know, the standard circular models or business models that we work with today, but they were very effective for giving us some scope and some parameter for what we were going to try to achieve in the street. And resource efficiency, when you look at energy, water, waste, they're very tangible and practical things that most people interact with, whether you're a business or you're just an individual. So that was a really good one for us. Reverse logistics, people are like, what are you talking about? But once you explain the concept, it's not very hard to get. But it's something that, like you just said, is very complementary to the other initiatives, as well as incentivized return. That kind of guided our whole premise to say we wanted to incentivize people to come back to the street to, you know, invest, spend their money, but also in turn get value and have an experience whilst they were there. And that was really something that guided everything that we did. And we gave a lot of thought about not only the things that happen sort of under the, this is like an analogy I would typically give. You know, if you walk into a circular economy street, or, you know, the projects that we work on today that are much larger scale, we're looking at a whole community. You know, if you walk in there, you don't just go, wow, this is circular. It typically is the things that happen, you know, inside the engine room. But we gave a lot of thought, and this is something I think that's very important, you know, for any circular economy project, is that you think about how do you display and communicate, you know, why something is circular or what its value and contribution is to the street, because that helps build that experience and the identity. It also helps people's understanding critically of what a circular economy could mean. So yeah, we gave a lot of thought around that, and the incentivized return concept really supported our facilitation of that approach.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, Ashley, I know we got a little bit of a later start because of the technical difficulties. Would you be able to go like maybe 10 or so minutes extra?
Yeah, sure. I could, yeah, 10 minutes will be fine. My husband is struggling in the background, but it should be fine.
Okay.
I'm conscious that we had a tough start, so I want to make sure this is worth your while.
Yeah, no, and I apologize. I just want to make sure that your story can get shared, you know, as well as possible, because it's so fascinating. So the circular experiment was just one, that's how you kind of kickstarted what you're doing now, but now you're doing other things. And so I'm curious, like what are you doing? What has been your main focus now, and how has sort of the circular experiment shaped that kind of work?
So I think from the circular experiment, we went from being, you know, two sisters working on this one street to being engaged by one of Australia's largest companies as a client. That was our first project. It's one of our largest projects to date still, and we're working on that at the moment and will for many years. And that project is with Lendlease, a property developer, and we are developing Australia's first circular economy master plan community. And that entry point from the experiment, you know, was such an incredible opportunity to apply what we had learned, but at scale, and also to take the people with us on this journey, because we had done something through that experiment that was tangible and understandable. And that meant that we could communicate the value of a circular economy in a meaningful way in which people actually understood it and wanted to invest in it and wanted to take it to scale in this particular community. So this experiment has been the backbone of everything that we've done and continue to do, because it gives us an ability to communicate practical examples and the value of a circular economy. And now, you know, that project I just mentioned with Lendlease, that community, that's ongoing. And, you know, the strategy that we developed looks at all aspects of this community, from energy, water, waste, agriculture, technology again. And we have like 80 different projects that sit in that strategy that are all integrated and complementary to one another. But again, you can't do it all and you can't do it alone. So, you know, we need to start somewhere. And we've identified as materials as one of our major drivers context for this particular community. So we're looking at the construction to develop all of the households and all of the commercial properties. We're also looking at all of the curbside or residential materials that are generated from the household level. And we are bringing all those materials together inside the community to make sure that they stay in the productive economy through making sure they're collected cleanly in clean streams. So just, you know, HDP plastic with HDP plastic, glass with glass, etc. And same for the construction waste. And then we identify our offtake partners and we keep those materials circulating. And at the same time, we make sure the business case and models stack up. Now, that's just like one example of what we're doing as a company. And that's a project that, you know, we'll be working on for several years. But we also find ourselves working in such a diversity of, you know, organizations and also addressing different opportunities and also challenges that businesses are facing and governments alike. So we don't have a mandate to work in, you know, just the built environment or just the resources sector. Circular economy, because it is systemic, means that you can absolutely work and create value across any aspect of a supply chain. And typically that diversity can give you such power to generate increased value, because what I have found, you know, through my experiences, you know, in working on such a great array of projects, is that there are incredible opportunities to take a lesson or an advancement or a problem even from one sector and find a solution in another and introduce those two parties together. And, you know, we developed the Circular Economy Lab that just did just that. We brought 26 different organizations together to ideate and create circular economy outcomes that were commercialized. And it just goes to show that, you know, collaboration isn't easy, but it is essential if you're going to achieve a circular economy. And as an organization, we very much practice what we preach, and we know that it's all about action, demonstration, and collaboration, and being very authentic and driving a values-driven agenda forward.
Yeah, and what you said about the cross-sectoral collaboration, I find that very important, and also sort of an empowering in the way that a lot of times if you try to get companies within the same sector, there might be some competition. But if you're able to sort of go across sectors and look outside, you can create partnerships and collaborations that you might not be able to achieve if you're trying to just work within a specific sector, because often there you have a lot of maybe inherent competition between different companies.
Yeah, I think the days of, you know, competition aren't going anywhere. But I, you know, what we encouraged back, you know, back doing the circular experiment was to say the businesses compete where you need to compete, you know, compete on your salad and your steak, but don't compete on your napkins and your delivery trucks and your waste and your energy. That doesn't make any sense. Look at bulk, you know, buyers of renewable energy, look at peer-to-peer trading, you know, look at, you know, making your waste an input for another business. Look at, you know, one delivery truck in which you all buy the same napkins, you know, reverse logistics of all of your certain types of plastic packaging. And they got that concept in the end, but it took a while for them to understand that, you know, it's not smart to compete on everything, compete as whole businesses. It's smarter to collaborate and then compete where you need to, because I think competition is healthy.
Yeah, that's a fascinating way to look at it as well. I mean, also you probably become more efficient and maybe even be able to reduce costs if you're all getting your same napkins from this one place rather than all sort of trying to source them separately and having different trucks come at different times.
Absolutely. And that point is so critical. Yes, you can reduce costs and you have a better relationship with your direct businesses, but like starting to think in that systems-led approach, it's that particular street was a one-way street that we worked on, only 200 meters in length. They had over 50 delivery trucks a day, you know, and that delivery truck, those delivery trucks all parked in front of one of the cafes. And of course, that cafe and their customers were getting very irritated. It was taking away their customers because they was like the truck exhaust and everything else. But above and beyond that, from an economic perspective, and circular economy is about improving, you know, the economic outcome for business whilst doing good for the environment and society. You know, that was costing $50 each time for each delivery truck. And I was like, why are you all paying $50 for to have a truck that's also really annoying one of your neighboring businesses, depleting the amenity of the street, which is affecting people even coming down here to spend money in your business? If you start to really understand those interconnectivities in the system and then can start to reconfigure it and find, you know, economically viable ways to address it whilst doing good for the environment, etc., you know, it's a no-brainer. It's logical, it makes sense. And to be honest, that's why we had such a successful experiment, because when you break it down and you make it very clear for people, they are always going to choose a circular approach. I have no doubt about it.
Hmm. So our listeners are mainly working professionals, and a lot of them are, you know, listening to the podcast, trying to get inspired and really thinking about trying to implement circular change in their own or in their own organizations or companies. So if there's one piece of advice that you would give them for people who are just getting started or trying to really apply this to their own situation, what one key piece of advice would you give?
Be brave and just put one foot in front of the other. And that bravery doesn't mean you need to, you know, work on the streets or, you know, start a big project or start your own company. It may just be reaching out to a CEO of an organization or someone you've really admired. But ultimately, I think being brave in this transition and identifying your role within it is the most critical thing you could do.
Mm-hmm. It seems, I mean, I don't know the full story for your circular experiment and things like that, but it seems like you were quite brave in reaching out to people, finding advisors to help you sort of direct you into this idea of like looking at a specific system and the different key concepts that you needed to look at. I'm sure you probably also were talking to a lot of government officials and so many different people, like the customers in this street and things like that. So it seems like you've really taken this be brave approach and implemented it yourself.
Yeah, we have. And, you know, it was terrifying walking up to businesses and, you know, cold calling. And, you know, I had never, ever been in a meeting with government representatives before in my life. And we wrote a letter to our environment minister at the time for the state of Queensland. And he wrote back and he organized a meeting with government directors. My sister and I baked cookies to take to that meeting. And, you know, that's so funny now when we laugh about it. But just always be yourself and be brave. And, you know, I believe that's where success will really come from. You've got to back yourself, you know, and bravery is a beautiful attribute or quality to have. And we need it in a circular economy because it's not easy. That's definitely the truth about a circular economy or a circular transition. It's not going to be easy. So people that are willing to be brave are so essential, and we need them all over the world. Mm-hmm. So that's my key bit of advice.
Yeah. I like what you said about being genuine as well, because I think your personality shines through just from the minute that you go to your website, for example. I love like you have like the little inner circle, and you can tell, you know, just from like logging onto your website, just about like who you are and who your company is. So I'll of course link to that in the show notes on the Getting in the Loop podcast website. But I'm sure we could be here all day, Ashley, but we have the time difference and you need to kind of get back to what you were doing before this, and I'm going to start my day as well. But I wanted to ask you the question that I ask all guests before we go, which is, if you could create an event for the In the Loop game, what would it address? And for those who haven't played the In the Loop game, and it's about a game where you're collecting different materials to make a product, and there's different events that happen. Sometimes they help you get these materials and help, sometimes they hinder you in getting these materials, but sort of above all else, the game kind of tries to make you think about the interconnectedness between different systems and the globe today. So Ashley, if you could have an In the Loop event that you would create, what kind of focus would you have it be?
I would have, because we work with a lot of companies in the resources sector, the big players like BHP and Rio Tinto. And we look at the connection to the renewable energy sector and the climate agenda, I would create an event around people, or create an event around the critical metals and minerals that are required for our transition to a low carbon economy, and how closely interlinked renewables are with our extractive sector, our resources sector.
Fascinating. Yeah, that's quite a good one. I don't think there's a complete event that does that with like with linking the two.
Yeah. It'd be fun.
Yeah, definitely. So, well, this has been such a pleasure to chat with you and to hear more about the amazing practical work that you are doing. I'm sure that the listeners, I got so much out of this and feel super inspired. So I'm sure that the listeners also, maybe some of them will even contact you because you're so inspiring and want to learn from you.
Together. So if you do want to reach out, please don't hesitate. Very friendly and approachable.
Yeah. We're having internet connections right now, but okay. So, but yeah, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. And before you go, where can listeners go online to learn more about you and the topics that we discussed?
Our website, which I think, Teddy, you said you were going to link earlier, but also LinkedIn, our team, in particular myself and my co-founder, who's my sister, Janie, we share project updates every week because we really, again, believe in getting as much demonstration out there. And we also want critical feedback, you know, so we can do better and grow better and help support the, you know, the global transition to a circular economy. So check us out on LinkedIn and have a look at our website.
Excellent. And is this your personal LinkedIn or is this your company?
Sorry,
LinkedIn?
Personal.
Personal.
Personal. So Ashley Morris and also Janie Morris.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. For show notes and links, go to our website at gettinginthelooppodcast.com. And while you're there, subscribe to our mailing list to have new episodes delivered to your inbox every Monday. See you next week.